This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Good morning, boys and girls. How is everyone doing? Got a quick phone call to make.
You're so in love, so much in love.
See if this works. March 2nd, 2008. I don't know. We may not get an answer. I'll tell you all about it in a minute. Very important phone call, though.
Hi, this is Ann. You've reached my cell phone. Please leave a message, and I'll return your call as soon as possible. Thank you.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options. To send a fax, press 4 now. To leave a callback number, press 5.
Happy birthday, Mom! Where are you? I know that you're, I think she's traveling somewhere back from Mexico. I don't know why you would choose to travel on your birthday, but nonetheless, it doesn't make me love you any less. Hope you're doing well. Hope you had a great time. I'll try and call you later today or tomorrow. But those of us listening from the studio and all through the airwaves, want to wish Anne Moore happy birthday. Travel safely, Mom. There we go. That's my start to March 2nd, 2008. Hope everybody's having a good day and a good weekend. The weather is beautiful. Yesterday we took a, Sarah and I took a really long drive through Nelson County. You know, one of those interesting, just drive around town drives. And let me take a moment and thank 45fix.com for being with us today. If you have a project but not the time, there's a simple way to find a contractor. From kitchen and bathroom remodeling, house painting to decks and siding, it's 45fix.com. Immediate, no obligation estimates available anytime. The number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. And hopefully everyone out there is listening today. We're going to be talking about epilepsy, how it works if you have epilepsy, but we're going to focus a little bit about on those who don't have epilepsy and what they should be doing to help students, especially parents, some faculty in schools, etc. So write down the number, and we will go from there. 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS. Let me fire up all kinds of stuff going back on here today. I'm amazed at how active I'm being already. Lots of buttons to push. Let's do this and introduce our guests. Suzanne Bischoff. Susan, how are you, Suzanne?
Well, thank you for having me.
Suzanne is the executive director of the Epilepsy Foundation of Virginia, which is I guess right here in Charlottesville, although you have other places to go when you travel around the state, you are your foundation itself of the foundation is right here in Charlottesville, correct?
Yeah, thanks to the Department of Neurology at the University of Virginia.
And what does the Epilepsy Foundation of Virginia do? What's your mission?
When people come out of the doctor's office and they've talked about their medication, I like to talk to them about dating and driving and problems at work or and all these things.
So you're not the doctor. You're like how to incorporate epilepsy and the things that go with it into a natural life.
Absolutely, and because, I love to talk to spouses and girlfriends.
One
and
of the things that one of the things that a lot of people aren't familiar with is epilepsy is called the invisible illness because you can't look and tell that someone has this.
Absolutely, and that's why so many people misunderstand it.
In fact, I was talking to someone this morning who said, I only know, other than me, and one of the reasons that we're doing this program is I qualify by general definition as an epileptic. I believe and we have Howard Goodkin here. Howard, how are you?
I'm well, thanks.
All right, let me try that again. No, that was me. One more time. Say hello one more time.
Good morning, Rick.
There you go. See, I have to actually turn the button on for people to hear the microphone. Howard is here as well. And Howard, if I remember correctly, the definition of epilepsy is you have to have at least two seizures with 24 or 48 hours in between them?
Epilepsy is really two unprovoked seizures. These are seizures that occur with no obvious precipitant. You haven't withdrawn from alcohol. You don't have an infection on your brain. So it's two unprovoked seizures. And usually they should be separated in time by several hours. Probably 24 hours is a good place to start.
And what do you mean by what would provoke a seizure?
So in young children, sometimes fever can be the cause of the seizure. And even if they have multiple seizures with fever, we call those febrile seizures, and we don't count that as epilepsy. And people who have an alcohol problem, when they withdraw from alcohol, they can have seizures that are provoked by the alcohol withdrawal. And again, we don't count those as counting towards epilepsy.
All right. But again, as I was saying, I'm not shy about admitting that I have had epilepsy. If you listen to the program on a mostly regular basis, every once in a while, two times a year, sometimes three, you've heard something weird happen where I start mumbling and I can't get the words right. And you're like, what in the world is he talking about? Or somebody else, Michael, will run in and do the weather all of a sudden. Sometimes that's it. Although we'll talk about the different types of seizure. Mine is not a physical seizure at that point. But obviously epilepsy means a lot to me. And someone that I was talking to made mention that she only knew two people who have epilepsy, myself and then someone else. And what is the general percentage?
So it's about 2-3% of the world's population who have epilepsy. So when you multiply that by the number of the people in the world, you're talking several million people with epilepsy.
And she works at the University of Virginia, so she probably passes hundreds, right?
I don't know that she passes hundreds in her day, but there's certainly many people that she passes during the day.
If you ride the bus, if she's worked there for several years, and not being a student, but watching the students come and go, as when I worked with in the student area, it was always like, gosh, I'm getting older. They're all staying the same age because they sort of, okay, there's always 19, 20, 21, 22-year-olds. All right. But there are invisible illness because you don't know who has it unless you ask them, unless something happens for you to realize it or they tell you.
It's also called the poet's affliction, which I like better, because Ooh. Many people with epilepsy write very well, and they write beautiful poems, and I get a lot of those, and I'm usually deeply impressed by them.
And we all know that I write beautifully, because when I do those opening monologues, that they are stunning, and people just fall out of their chairs. And have to pull over on the side of the road to listen to what I'm writing. All right, let's start with some of the basic stuff. Suzanne Bischoff from the Epilepsy Foundation of Virginia, Howard Goodkin, doctor, associate professor from the Department of Neurology here at UVA. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. If you're out in one of the areas where you need a toll-free number, feel free to use it during the hour today. But let's run through some of the questions that have probably easier and more direct answers to them. Howard, definition and causes of epilepsy, and is there any genetic factor to it?
So the definition of seizure, really, many people think of it as an electrical storm in the brain. And our brain is normally a mixture of excitation and inhibition. And when we get too much excitation, that can lead to what we call a seizure. And that
excitation?
Excitatory activity in the brain, yes. And too little inhibition of the brain can lead to a seizure. The behavioral manifestations or the changes that one sees in the person having a seizure is going to depend on where in the brain that seizure occurs. So some seizures can lead to movements of the arms or legs. Some seizures lead to sensory phenomena like funny feelings or visual hallucinations. And so really where in the brain it is causes what the seizure looks like. And then is it genetic? There are certainly many, many causes of seizures and epilepsy. For some people, it is genetic. And they can look at their family tree and see that there's many, many other people that have had seizures. But for a large percentage, actually, epilepsy is post-traumatic or after they've hit their head many years later. If they've had a serious head injury, they can have seizures. And in the older population, strokes are often a cause of seizures.
I'm curious, you mentioned sort of briefly run across different types mm-hmm. and stages. What does it do? Does epilepsy have a greater lifespan for people? Does it create risk for other diseases?
Yeah, so I think at the outset we ought to note that epilepsy is not one disease, but epilepsy is a group of disorders that have in common what we talked about earlier, that they have that these people have recurrent seizures. So there are people earlier in their life who have seizures who have quite short lifespans because it's part of underlying other difficulties with the brain. And then there are people who acquire seizures much later in their lives after strokes who have lived a good long life. So we really can't talk about one type of epilepsy. We really have to talk about multiple different type of epilepsy.
How many different types are there? Is something where we're like three, or are there like 30?
We're talking whatever can injure the brain can lead to seizures. So we're talking multiple different types, not three, but on the order of 30.
Suzanne, at the Epilepsy Foundation of Virginia, how do you see a particular type more often than the other?
Yes, the people who have epilepsy and take a pill and then never have a seizure, they never approach us.
And then there's some of us who have epilepsy, fail to take our pills, and then have another one.
Yes, that's right. That happens a lot to young men your age, Rick. Between 18 and 46, taking their pills on time is a problem for that group.
Why is that?
First of all, you are used to taking a pill when you have a headache, and then it cures your headache, and you don't take the pill anymore. But these pills for epilepsy you have to take every day at a certain time. And as a young man, you have many other things to do. You go out, you date, sometimes you drink too much, whether we like it or not, and then you forget to take your pill. So it is a very common problem that I deal with in my office
I'm assuming that most people either take one pill a day, right? Some people take, or not one pill, but you take pills at one time of the day. Some take pills at two times of day, some at three times a day. Those are in my epileptic career, which I think goes back, 9 years now.
Yeah.
But do you, you talk about taking it at the same time every day.
Yes, that's why we advise people, take them with your meal if you have to take pills three times a day or after your meal, so that there is a sort of thing that you can relate it to. Or take them if you take it two times a day and you brush your teeth two times a day, take it while you brush your teeth. We even have little rhymes for people to remember to take their pills.
Well, yes, that might be helpful for me. Is there anything you can share?
I'll do that as soon as I know how many times a day you take pills.
Twice.
Let me think about it, and you ask Dr.
All right, I'll ask Dr. Howard Gutkin a couple questions. I'm curious, Howard, who is at risk? And we already identified that you said 2 to 3% of the general population. Is this something that is more I'm curious as to who is at risk, and if you can tie in, you said 2 to 3% worldwide, but are there some areas of the world, are there some types of people, men more than women, or Americans more than Asians or anything like that, that qualifies as well?
No, epilepsy sees no boundaries. So it's both men and women. It's people all around the world who suffer from epilepsy. A little bit getting back to the question, Rick, of why people don't take their medicines, and it gets back to a little bit of you talking about that it's a silent disease, is that people can go for long stretches and not have seizures, whether they're taking their medicines or not. So you miss your medicine one day, you don't have a seizure, and all of a sudden you think, why am I on this medicine, and stop taking your medicines altogether. And then lo and behold, your seizures come back. And that's why really the most common reason for somebody who has seizures, for them to have seizures again, is that they forget they take their medication. There are other things such as stress or staying up too late or drinking too much alcohol that can provoke or cause a seizure. But the most common reason for somebody to have a seizure once they have epilepsy is forgetting to take or not taking their medications.
All right, we are talking about epilepsy here. Suzanne Bischoff, Executive Director from the Epilepsy Foundation of Virginia, based here in Charlottesville. Howard Goodkin, a doctor, associate professor. Is it associate?
Assistant.
Assistant professor. What's the difference?
Just where I am on the ranking.
This where
so
you're in the
moving
ranking.
Up the rank.
All right. Assistant professor, Department of Neurology at UVA. And as I stated earlier, 11:15 here on the wake-up call, I am qualified as an epileptic, and one of the reasons that we are doing the show today. Feel free to dial up if you have questions, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. The plan today is to do a little bit about defining epilepsy, but to explain to others who, the other 97 or 98% of people who do not have epilepsy, but who may be exposed to it in the sense of a friend, a family member, a coworker, a student who has it. So we'll talk about how schools and faculty deal with it, et cetera.
I've got a little rhyme for you.
Okay, for people who take medication twice a day, like myself, and who, you know, that is how I had my second seizure, was I, you know, got in bed, oh, I don't want to get back up, oh, I got to work, oh, darn it, I forgot. So go ahead.
Take my druggies twice a day, and the seizures stay away.
All right, I like it.
Simple enough.
Sarah, please write that down. Okay. I'm curious, Howard, is the only way to treat epilepsy through medication?
Well, medication is the first place that we start to treat epilepsy. And we're very fortunate in that over the last 10 to 15 years, there are many newer drugs to treat epilepsy. And fortunately, many of them have few side effects. Prior to 1993, in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, mainstay of treating epilepsy was Dilantin, a medication that has many side effects and interacts with multiple other medications. And today we have many newer drugs with lesser drug interactions, fewer drug interactions, and fewer side effects. So medications are always our first-line therapy in the treatment of seizures. And people who fail to have their seizures come under control with medicines, those who we call medically refractory, there are other treatment options available. One is something called a vagus nerve stimulator, which is a little battery pack and electrical generator that gets implanted into the chest with a wire that then runs into the neck and attaches to a nerve in the neck called the vagus nerve. And what that vagus nerve stimulator does is intermittently kind of stimulates the vagus nerve, and for some reason, we're not really sure at this point why, many people find that their seizures come under control with the vagus nerve. And there's also epilepsy surgery, and those people in whom we can tell exactly where in the brain their seizures are coming from, if it's in an area of the brain that we call outside eloquent cortex, outside that part of the brain that helps us with movement or sensation, then we can actually remove the area of the brain where the seizure is coming from and for many people that will get rid of their epilepsy. Finally, there are other treatment methods. Some people find diet therapy to work quite well. The one that has the longest use is called the ketogenic diet. This is a diet in which one consumes primarily fats and very few carbohydrates, and basically can trick the brain into not having seizures. And more recently, people have been trying to use the Atkins diet and finding that that can be successful in treating seizures. And the place that's leading the thoughts about diet therapy is Johns Hopkins University and a colleague of mine, Eric Kossoff.
All right, I want to come back to that because that's one of the key questions on my list for the day is diet and nutrition playing a part and my question was playing a part in cause and undermining medication, and you're saying that it could be part of the actual salutant
for some medication. For some people, certainly diet can play a role. A well-regulated diet the physician should be involved in anybody who attempts to be on the ketogenic diet or the Atkins diet for controlling their seizures.
All right, we'll come back to that in a minute. It is 11:20 here on the Wake Up Call as we talk about epilepsy. Suzanne Bischoff, Executive Director, Epilepsy Foundation of Virginia. Howard Goodkin, a doctor, assistant professor. I'm going to screw that up another dozen times. Department of Neurology at UVA. 979-0919 is the number. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly sunny today. Highs 55 to 60. Clear tonight. Lows 30 to 35. Mostly sunny tomorrow. Highs 65 to 70. A little lower in Lynchburg. Right now in the valley, 46, 48 in Lynchburg, 47 in Richmond, 43 at the Charlottesville studio.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let me take a moment to thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support. They have the gear keeping you warm outside on the way to work or class or on the trail. Blue Ridge staff can recommend the hat, pair of gloves, or jacket, including the Windstopper fleece from the North Face that'll let you enjoy the outdoors anytime. You'll find Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Barracks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville, the Mountain Inn at Wintergreen, or at brms.com. And it's not just the underwriters. We need to thank special people like Roy Huta, Brenda Clements-Jones, and Ann Evans for contributing to the NRN Fund Drive in this past fall. It's also because of program underwriters like the one you hear from this hour, as well as Central Battery and Rapture. So stay tuned. Tell a friend about the Wake Up Call every Sunday and enjoy other programming on WNRN. And don't forget the upcoming Spring Fund Drive at the end of this month. All right, back with Howard and Suzanne. I'm curious, this question came from someone else, and jump at it. Suzanne, I'm gonna ask this to Howard, and then I'm going to get to you because I think they sort of tie together. So, Howard, the question had to do with triggering an onset and length of time and how to help someone during a seizure. So, run through that. I think we already covered a little bit about the many things that could trigger a seizure, but the average length of time and what to do to help someone.
Well, fortunately, most seizures last less than 2-3 minutes. For many people, they're quite brief, and again, this depends on what type of seizure we're talking about, and we didn't really get into this too much, but there are both focal or partial seizures, and the other major class is generalized seizures. And within the generalized seizures, there are things called absence seizures, or what used to get called as petit mal seizures, and these may be as brief as a second or two, whereas the longer convulsive seizures, those in which somebody shakes, can go on typically for 2 to 3 minutes. So usually seizures are short. If they become longer in duration, then we enter something called status epilepticus, which we consider an emergency. And in those cases, if you're at home, there are medications that your doctor can prescribe which can help to stop a prolonged seizure, status epilepticus, or an ambulance should be called to get that person to the hospital as quickly as possible. The most important thing to remember when somebody's having a seizure is to stay calm. Again, the majority stop within several minutes. If you can, lay them on their side, loosen their necktie, move all furniture out of the way in which they could injure themselves. And I think out in the general public, there's still this idea that somebody can swallow their tongue during their seizure and that something should be placed in somebody's, something like a spoon or your hands or a rag should be placed in somebody's mouth while they're having a seizure. And this is exactly the wrong thing to do. It certainly can lead to injury to both the person who's having the seizure and the person who's attempting to put their fingers in somebody's mouth.
All right. Now, Suzanne, so someone has their seizure, and I'm assuming that they don't have it by themselves at home. They have it somewhere. They have it around friends. They have it around family. They have it at work. And now you have the stigma that goes with that, whether it's something, a stigma that you have personally about, oh my gosh, what's wrong with me, and when is this going to happen again, and you know, I bit the crap out of my tongue. Because you effectively black out, you lose your driver's license for 6 months. Talk a little bit about what the Epilepsy Foundation of Virginia does with someone who's had their... It's almost like being an alcoholic in the sense of it's not just the person. There's also the family and the people around them who need to be informed properly about facts, not fiction, and then put them on the right track again.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I have to say immediately is that there have been many successful people who had epilepsy. The writer Dostoevsky had epilepsy. Caesar had epilepsy. Alexander the Great, we think, had epilepsy as well. So,
Rick Moore.
And Rick Moore, a very successful a DJ on local radio, has epilepsy. So epilepsy doesn't have to stand in the way. But there are a few things, like Howard says, people have to know what to do and do first aid rightly. They have to stay calm, because if epilepsy is well treated, then it's not a big deal. Sometimes people are very tired after a seizure, so give them some time to rest. At work, I tell employers, can we change the shift? Can people start working a little later and help you lock up? I've noticed that if people go to work later in the morning, after they've been up for several hours, then their chance of having a seizure seems somehow to get smaller. So there are 5,000 practical ways of dealing with epilepsy. There is one thing we probably have to talk about, Rick, is depression. We call it, as an expensive word, a comorbidity, which means that people with epilepsy have a higher chance to have depression as well. And that is, of course, very serious for the family.
Real quick, comorbidity makes me think of this. Do people with epilepsy have a shorter life expectancy?
No, not in general. You must say that the chance of...
I mean, I recognize that some people have a seizure because they have some sort of disease or illness that goes with that.
Yes.
But just the basic epilepsy...
No, I still say that 75% of persons with epilepsy lead absolutely normal, long lives.
All right, so back to talking about depression, comorbidity.
Yeah, the comorbidity. There is a high correlation between epilepsy and depression, and especially with people who have problems driving, going to their jobs, and so on. What we have to look for, the people themselves, is if you lose any pleasure in what you've been doing before, like sex, or going out with your friends, or taking a walk in the woods, and you enjoy that and you don't anymore, then you might be depressed. I say before you go on a lot of antidepressants, go and take a walk every day, because physical exercise helps against feelings of depression. Also, social contact, talking to your friends, help. But your depression might be more serious, and then we call it a clinical depression, and then you have to do something about it and talk to your doctor about it.
All right, 11:28 on the wake-up call. Howard Goodkin from the Department of Neurology at University of Virginia. Suzanne Bischoff from the Epilepsy Foundation of Virginia as we talk about epilepsy. And let's talk a little bit about students with epilepsy. And I see the phone ringing in, 979-0919. You're welcome to dial in. Micah will answer the phone and patch you through. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS for the longer question. All right, let me back up. While we wait for that, I won't ask a long question. I'll ask this one to both of you, Howard and Suzanne. What we've talked about so far, are we talking about all people with epilepsy when we get into this? Are we talking about just the percentage who have major problems? I think one of the things with the average person on the street who knows little is they only think of the worst, sort of like the top tier, the people who need to wear the helmet, the people who you never know when something bad is going to happen. What are we talking about when we talk about depression and people having trouble keeping a job and that sort of thing, you know, needing to move their job back from daytime to later in the day?
Yeah, yeah. That is the 25% usually that I talk about. So 75% of people like you lead absolutely normal lives. We all have accidents, all things happen, but your life is not marred at all about epilepsy, with epilepsy.
You might, Sarah, please don't call in and correct her on that.
And as I told you, Alexander the Great, I don't think lost land because he had epilepsy. I don't think Caesar was less politically accomplished because he had epilepsy. I don't think Dostoevsky wrote less well because he had epilepsy. So these are people who are very successful. That is 75%. Even with those successful people, if you are on medication, I know in my training sessions there are 27 commonly used medication for epilepsy, and the big majority has drowsiness as a side effect. So for teachers, that is a very important to know, that students with epilepsy who take these medication may be a little bit slower in answering. That doesn't mean that they are less intelligent.
All right. The question here, Michael, are they still online too? No. All right. The question, because it's still lit. Hang it up, Michael. The question is websites. What is the the Epileptic Foundation website, Suzanne?
www.epilepsyfoundation/local/Virginia. And you also get our headquarters, which
that
is
was a lot.
Name. Yes. I have a shorter one with a link, and that is www.efva.org.
Okay. EFVA, Epilepsy Foundation, Virginia, VA, Virginia, EFVA.org. And don't forget, you can go online. We'll podcast this, and you can. We'll have the link in there. Micah will put the link in there as well. 11:31 here on the wake-up call. Let me thank Blue Ridge Graphics for allowing us to do this. Blue Ridge Graphics can be found in Meade Avenue and East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom T-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. But we were talking about efva.org for the website in relation to our epilepsy topic. All right. A little bit about focus on a younger age here, talk about students, et cetera, because I think the numbers we talked about, there must be people out there whose children have epilepsy, who their neighbors, et cetera, have epilepsy, and teachers. I'm really curious, how do schools and faculty work with an epileptic student? One of the things that I see if I can find where I copied it, and this wasn't from you, but this was from someone else. Staff and students should be provided with info when someone from epilepsy is attending that school. Comment on that?
Well, I think if the person who has the epilepsy agrees, I think privacy is important here as well. When we give a training sessions and we go around schools all the time, we usually have the pupil and a parent there to talk, to give a presentation with us. And that makes sure that they agree to the fact. Not everybody, epilepsy is still in the shadows.
Why is that? I mean, it's not like, it just seems like that's something from 1950.
Exactly. I think it is because a lot of people with epilepsy, like you, who are successful, don't want to talk about it. And they don't touch us with a 10-foot pole. So we can't use them as role models for epilepsy.
Howard, do you run into this? I mean, because your specialty is pediatric, correct?
Correct.
Do the parents, you know, are they embarrassed? Are they hiding the fact that their child suffers from this?
I see all different types of parents. There are parents who work well with Suzanne and get the message out that their child can do well at school, they can participate in sports, and that epilepsy is not anything to be scared of. And certainly there are other parents who I have to educate that epilepsy is just a word that means your child has the risk of having recurrent seizures, but that they can be highly successful and do well in addition to having their epilepsy. So what we really need to do, and the reason Suzanne's here today and I'm here today, is to make sure that everybody's educated about what seizures are, what epilepsy is, and to remove that stigma of from the word epilepsy.
What is a... Because there are obviously a lot of teachers and faculty in this town. What do those folks need to do when working with having an epileptic student in the room?
There may be absences because the person with epilepsy goes to the hospital or the doctor. Give him time to make up the notes and help him a little bit, you know, to make up for that lost time. Very effective has been if the student can take a tape recorder to class. And then if he has a small absence seizure and he is blacked out for a couple of seconds, then he can listen to the tape. Also, what will help is give him some more time at the exam, because I told you earlier about the drowsiness in a lot of epilepsy medication. Well, drowsiness makes you slower.
Well, and those two things, and you know, I want to get into this before we finish. It is 11:36. But again, back to make it a personal point, is mine are language related. When I have my issue, I can be carrying on a conversation, and for whatever reason it strikes, and you don't notice that I'm having it physically, I'm not shaking, I'm not falling down with my eyes rolling back in my head, but I can't understand a darn thing we're talking about. Or if I'm reading at home, I have to fold it up, put it away, and come back to it 15, 20 minutes later. And so you're talking about using the tape recorder or giving more, if I was to be taking a test, you know, that's 15 or 20 minutes that's gone out of my time if it's a time test. Anyway, we'll come back to that. I do have a phone call. Let us talk with Brenda. Hey, Brenda.
Hi, Brenda. hi, Rick. I'm
yes.
A little nervous here.
That's all right.
This is Brenda Clements Jones. You mentioned my name
yes,
earlier.
Yes, Brenda is a regular supporter of this program. Thank you, Brenda.
You're welcome. You've really touched a spot in my heart here with this topic. I'm curious to know about the history of the treatment, and you were talking about the stigma, Rick. My grandmother was committed to St. Elizabeth's Hospital when my father was a toddler in the early 30s. So, and she remained there until she died in the 60s. So there is that stigma. And I don't understand why she would have been committed to a mental institution because of epilepsy.
Brenda, you want to listen to us? You want to hang on and make a comment afterwards?
I'll just hang up and listen.
All right. Thank you so much for calling in. It's a great great thing, and we're going to let Suzanne start with that.
Thank you.
Well, that's Virginia for you. I have to say, thank heavens the law has been repealed, But there were institutions for the mentally ill and the epileptics in Virginia. And I think we got rid of that law in the 60s. Am I correct, Howard?
I don't know the exact date, sorry.
But yes, these were... there are more laws in Virginia that I'm not proud of, but this is certainly one of them.
I guess Brenda also asked about the history of medications. Prior to 1933, there was only one medication used, one that we no longer use called triple bromides. So I should back up. We rarely use triple bromides today. And 1933 really begins the modern-day treatment of epilepsy with the discovery of Dilantin. And then, as I talked about earlier, a second generation begins in the early 90s with newer medications. But between 1930 and 1990, one of the major medications used and still used today was Dilantin.
Are there any, I guess, things that we would consider mean, you know, shocking? Do we actually do any electrical treatment in the early days of treatment? I mean, because you talk now about, you mentioned earlier there was a device that you would put in, and the wire would go back and touch the you know, a nerve in the back of the head or in the neck. But is that something that would have been done in the old days?
There have been people who have advocated use of electroconvulsive therapies in people with seizures. Today we limit shocking just to the vagus nerve and some experimental procedures called deep brain stimulators, which are still at this point very experimental for the treatment of epilepsy.
And Suzanne, just to finish up with this from Brenda's question, why? I mean, I used the word stigma earlier, but is that really, were people put in the mental institution because they didn't know what else to do? Because they didn't have the medication that might make the seizure itself disappear for a long time before the next one came up?
Exactly. That's part of the reason. But also, a seizure can look very frightening. And sometimes people get blue in the face.
Yeah, I scared the pee out of the pants of
yes,
some people.
And people
when I
are
had
afraid. As a matter of fact, I was talking to a colleague of Howard's the other day, and he said that he has to tell the nurses not to do anything when people have seizures because their reflex is to do something about it, and you shouldn't.
Right.
Or unless, you know, apart from the first aid, of course.
Thanks for the call, Brenda. 979-0919 if you have a call. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. If you're online and you're listening, I think it's WNRN Studio. Is that right, Drew?
Yes.
WNRN Studio is the instant message through the AOL aspect. 1141 here on the Wake Up Call.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, this week, a group of budget-conscious citizens asking the plans for the new $142 million Ragged Mountain Dam and Pipeline be reconsidered. It's official. Prism Coffee House is leaving its Rugby Road home. The Hook catches us up to date. And the latest movie reviews are there every week. The Hook, medication for all of our needs. And support today also coming from NBC 29 with the experience you've come to know and trust for years and news in Charlottesville and the Shenandoah Valley. That's NBC 29, news you can count on at sunrise, noon, 5, 5:30, 6, and 11, only on NBC 29. And you heard me ask him a question. Drew Thompson in the room for Les Stemps Perdue. It's the best of 80s and 90s alternative. No Tiffany, no Metallica, no New Kids on the Block. But you will hear Tears for Fears, Nirvana, and Lush. And requests always welcome. Les Stemps Perdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music. All right, back in action. Talking about epilepsy with Howard Goodkin, doctor and assistant professor from the Department of Neurology at UVA. Suzanne Bischoff, executive director from the Epilepsy Foundation of Virginia. All right. I'm going to be guilty of using the microphone for myself here for a few minutes. We've talked about physical seizures. I qualify as being epileptic because I had a physical seizure several years ago. And then I had my second one when I stopped taking my medication, not necessarily by saying, oh, I'm fine, just by being lazy for like four doses in a row. But I don't have physical seizures. I have what my doctor calls auras. And I don't know if that's the proper word or not, but where mine are just, you know, when I was talking about losing issues with my language. Now, how many people have that sort of issue?
There are many people who experience something similar to what you experience, Rick, in a form of a deja vu. So many people experience what you're calling an aura. Many people have deja vus where they get the sensation that they've been in a room before, although they've not actually been there or they've been in that situation, and we call that deja vu. And I think that for the population who doesn't have epilepsy, is the way they can best understand an aura. But other people's auras can be smelling something when it's not there, or hearing something when it's not there. And for those people who have epilepsy, an aura is actually what we call a simple focal or simple partial seizure. It has the exact same mechanism of those seizures that do have physical manifestations. So an aura is still a seizure in those people who have epilepsy. Not always can we completely get rid of auras with medications. They turn out to be the hardest type of seizures to treat.
All right. I want to come back to that again, mostly because it's a personal, you know, I won't be guilty about using the microphone for myself. But we have Tiffany from Stanton. Hey, Tiffany.
Hey, what's going on?
Not much. Bring it on. What you got?
Oh, I'm just a fellow epileptic over in the Valley, and I've worked with Suzanne a little bit, and just want to put in, you know, for you and I that you can be successful, and that stigma's there, but I guess depending upon your support around you, things can be fairly normal.
Yes, and I think that's a big part of it is, you know, my girlfriend on a regular basis says, have you taken your medication? Time to take your medicine. You know, and I think she knows that sometimes I'm like, oh, my God, will you please? Of course. And then probably 85% of the time it's like, oh, thank you, because I haven't taken my medicine. Not that I wouldn't have taken it, not that I was avoiding taking it, but, you know, she's reminding me at 6 o'clock, and I would have thought about it at 8:30.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm actually a special education teacher, so I can keep up with my students. But, yeah, and your family, it is extremely important that they support you and they're able to find some peace with it.
All right. Thanks so much, Tiffany. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Others can call in. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks is the toll-free number, and WNRN Studio if you want to send an instant message. All right, back to me. We're focusing on me for a few minutes here because I think a lot of people have this, right? I mean, you, Howard, you mentioned that there are – what percentage are we talking about of people who don't have a physical seizure anymore but have – or rarely but have the sort of mental issue, whether it's smelling something or seeing something or getting that image?
I think it's hard to know percentages of because some people – just never report those. That's just part of their daily life. They've come to learn with it and never actually discuss the fact that they may have an aura with anybody. And seizures are not the only diseases in which, epilepsy is not the only disease in which people have auras. It's important to know that people with migraine headaches also can get auras. And so if somebody's concerned that their auras may represent seizures versus migraine headaches, I would suggest that they talk to their physician.
One of the questions that I was asked is because I have my aura is not physical related, and as you said, there, you know, these auras are typically not physically related. I guess that's why you use the different word. But my girlfriend's mother is concerned about me driving down the road with, you know, her in the car, and what the concern is about. You know, am I given enough time to pull over if I feel one coming on? is it possible to tell the difference between the physical seizure and the language aura? And we mentioned about if you actually have one, you're not supposed to be driving anyway for 6 months. Well, my 6 months is long gone, so it's not like I'm breaking the law. But can the two of you chat a little bit about that?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I do a lot of advocacy with the Department of Motor Vehicles on behalf of people with epilepsy. And one of the things that they say, if the person is responsible and takes his medication on time and has an aura, and we know that that person will pull over, then they might give the driver's license before the 6 months are over. Also when the boy or girl has nocturnal seizures only. So I must say, maybe not all the listeners will agree, but in my view, the Department of Motor Vehicles is quite reasonable with helping out with seizures if you explain it to them well.
Howard, do you find that most, all, very few people can identify when the seizure is about to happen?
Depends on the person and their type of seizures. So some are very good at identifying that their seizure is about to come, but for a good portion of people, there's absolutely no warning. There's no aura. They don't have a chance to pull over to the side of the road when they're driving.
So should my girlfriend's mother be concerned?
Well, that she's with you, Rick, or
yes,
about your seizures?
Well, I was talking about her being a passenger in the car, goof.
I don't know your particular auras or how long they last, but if you have very prolonged auras and have a good warning that they're coming and that they've not been followed by a convulsive seizure for many years and you're good about taking your medications, then I think she should be slightly concerned but not overly concerned about your driving.
Right. 11:50 here in the wake-up call. As we talk about epilepsy, from all viewpoints, those who have it, those who work with it, students, those who and teachers and faculty, parents. We heard from Tiffany, who is a teacher. We heard from Brenda, whose grandmother had epilepsy. Feel free to dial us up and ask your question, 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS. Suzanne Bischoff, Executive Director from the Epilepsy Foundation of Virginia, based here in Charlottesville. Howard Goodkin, doctor at the Department of Neurology at UVA. I see we have a question on the internet issue. What are side effects from these two medications, Depakote and Trileptal?
So,
now, these are two of how many different pills?
At least 20 different types of anti-epileptics now in use.
Are they representative?
Depakote and Trileptal are very representative of the newer generation medications. It's important to note that Fritz Dreyfus, who was the founder of the epilepsy department here at the University of Virginia, was instrumental in bringing Depakote to the market in the United States, and that UVA played a major role in the drug trials for Depakote. Depakote, depending on side effects, can vary with age. To parents, I usually counsel them that it can cause a swelling of the pancreas, an organ that helps us digest our food, and that's called a pancreatitis. It can have effect on the bone marrow, which creates our red blood cells and white blood cells. It can affect the skin. But the major side effect that most people are concerned about are the physical side effect of Depakote, in that it can lead to weight gain in many people, some hair loss as well. And those tend to be the two major reasons that people want to come off of Depakote. Trileptal is a reformulation or an attempt to reduce the side effects of an older antiepileptic called Tegretol or carbamazepine. Trileptal is a fairly safe medication, although it's the one that I worry about mostly is in the first month of using Trileptal. Some people can get a serious skin rash called Stevens-Johnson syndrome, which unfortunately can be life-threatening. So when Trileptal started and a rash is observed within the first month, that needs to be evaluated immediately by a person's physician or dermatologist.
All right. You can, again, send your instant message question if you'd like. WNRN Studio on the AOL site. Dial us up and ask your question as well, 979-0919. You know, I don't know if we really got into this too much, but is the brain actually damaged during a seizure? And is there other damage that could take place? Loss of hearing, bad eyesight, you know, those sorts of things.
Yeah, so certainly seizures are very scary to watch somebody have, and sometimes a seizure can cause you to turn blue. But for the vast, vast majority of seizures, they don't lead to any injury of the brain. And I think that's important to remember. Although they're scary to look at, seizures can lead to physical injury if somebody falls and hits themselves, or if somebody's on a ladder, which somebody with epilepsy should be very careful about being on a ladder and likely not be on a ladder. So physical injury certainly can occur with seizures. But does the seizure itself injure the brain? Very rarely, and almost we could say never, unless it's a very prolonged seizure that I talked about earlier called status epilepticus.
Suzanne, I'm curious. We mentioned early in the hour about how epilepsy affects everyone. It's not just the person who has had the seizure. It's the friends and family, et cetera. And Brenda, when she called in, brought that. How does the Epilepsy Foundation of Virginia do that? Because it sounds like, and I may be very incorrect on this, but it sounded like a couple things you said were your conversations, your group meetings with people who actually have epilepsy. What does the Epilepsy Foundation of Virginia do for the others, the Al-Anon group, you know, the family members who need to come in and talk about it?
They do come in, and as a matter of fact, we started a new program on the advice of one of our clients in Abingdon, Virginia, of all places. But I now go over to people's houses on weekends, and the whole family can come over. And I say, well, I need at least 10 family members to be there. And then they can ask all sorts of questions. And it varies to how does epilepsy affect your sleep, your sexual life, your dating, your cooking at night, your driving.
Cooking at night?
For instance, if you have uncontrolled seizures, it may be good to do a lot of microwaving. So when you have a seizure, you won't fall over the stove. Yeah, these are practical things to keep in mind.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, you may not think about it until it happens.
Yes, and that is unfortunate that I have found that many people with epilepsy have injuries. As a matter of fact, the percentage for uncontrolled seizures is high because they just don't think about it. Well, that's the same thing with me. I was on a ladder the other day and I overreached, and guess what happened? And I know that I shouldn't overreach from a ladder. So we all do these silly mistakes.
I don't know if this is something that either one of you want to get into. Do either one of you have epilepsy?
I had in Africa when I was working in Wat Medani, Sudan. I had terrible seizures. We never know whether it was malaria because there was no doctor near. And when I came home, I decided not to bother with it anymore, and I never had them since.
Never had them since. All right. We are down to the last few minutes. I do want to thank Five Guys Burgers and Fries for letting us have this hour today. They serve America's standard fresh and handmade from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., and they're open until 10 Fridays and Saturdays. That's Five Guys Burgers and Fries behind the fountain in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. They're in the Hollymead Town Center up on the north side and on the downtown mall here in Charlottesville. On the web, it's fiveguys.com. That's fiveguys.com. And you are listening to WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. 11:58 here in the wake-up call. Drew's up next with Les Temps Perdue. Suzanne, you know, we've talked a little bit about here and there about things that you shouldn't do or things that may reduce your potential of seizure, but put them together in a group for us as we go out so that, you know, my mother can call me up and ask me if I'm doing the things that you mentioned properly, or that, you know, that the student who... you know, give it to them one more time so that whatever they gather out of it, this conversation.
There are about 72 rules on safety and seizures, and I won't mention them all. But if you contact me via our webpage at www.efva.org, then I can give you that information. And even mother-in-laws may call.
Even mother-in-laws may call. All right. And Howard, you know, what do you see when, and I realize, again, it's pediatric, but I'm sure that to get to where you are, you went through the neurological center and dealt with people of all ages. What is the cause for repeat most often? Is it failure to take the medicine? Is it not enough sleep? Is it, you know, falling down? Is it drinking too much? You know, which are the top couple things that lead to repeat visits?
Again, I think, as I stressed earlier, not taking your medication is high on the list of leading to repeat visits. But also, I think a lot of people who have epilepsy identify stress as a common cause of their seizures. So working with Suzanne, the Epilepsy Foundation, your family, your employers, to try to reduce stress as much as you can in your life is important for people with seizures.
All right. Thank you both for coming in today. I hope a lot of folks learned a lot and got things out of it. Happy birthday to my mother. Next week, we'll be talking about a potential coal plant down in Southwest Virginia from some folks who are trying not to let it be built. All right, and the fundraiser coming up at the end of March. If you have saved your money, if you have something that you would like us to be available as a business, want us to be available to others, and have your business mentioned, dial us up. Adios.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.org. The wake-up call is produced by Michael Strickland. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.